Welcome to the Speak Up Talk Radio Network. I am your hostess, Pat Rulo. We bring you hand-selected hosts, podcasts, and talk radio programming with listening options, 24/7 streaming, or listen on demand. We also feature one-on-one segments with important guests, people who have something to say that you need to hear. And if you are an author listening to today's interview and would like to be featured on the network, please visit speakuptalkradio.com for all of the details or contact us via email at pr@speakuptalkradio.com. And right now, I have a very interesting author to share with you. He is Jordan T. Maxwell. Jordan is a paramedic by trade, lives in North Central Missouri where he grew up and where his books titled Dandy Flowers are set. He is the father of a beautiful, inquisitive 18-year-old daughter who is a Buckeye at The Ohio State University and whom he lovingly calls Goose. His 16-year-old son, known affectionately as Monkey Man, is a handsome, intelligent high school junior who holds the distinction of being the only baby that his dad has ever delivered in his 30-plus years in emergency medical services. Jordan is in the early stages of writing his third Dandy Flowers novel and has adapted Dandy Flowers for the stage and is working on the stage adaptation of Dandy Flowers, Laura's Diaries as well. And you can find more at the website dandyflowers.com. And I am certainly interested to find out more about this fine gentleman. So welcome to the network, Jordan.
Well, thank you very much. Appreciate that. And my son would kill me if he knew I still called him Monkey Man. That was a long time ago, but it still sticks.
Well, maybe he can't listen to this interview then.
Oh, he can listen, and he can just be totally embarrassed by his father.
There you go. It's obviously lovingly said, right?
Yeah, yes. But he is 16, so there are moments where, yeah, he's 16.
I got it. I think we all get that.
Yep.
Well, now I have to ask the question, how and what were the circumstances of your having to deliver your son? I'm sure he'll appreciate this too.
Well, you see, my daughter was just two. And when she was born using midwives in a hospital in Kansas City. When Christopher came along, we decided to have a home birth. And it took me a little while to be comfortable with that, but dealing with the midwife who was going to be here, I finally was really comfortable with it. And then, my daughter's labor was 36 hours. The labor with Christopher was 36 minutes. So he came a lot faster than anticipated, and I honestly don't remember a whole lot about it. I went into medic mode. Mm-hmm. I just did what I needed doing. And he's 16 and he's still alive. So I guess things worked out quite nicely. But I'll be quite honest, I never, ever want to do that again.
Oh. Well, especially not your own child. And I bet your wife was kind of going crazy at that moment as well, yes?
She did really well. Did she? Her mother was here. Grandma was here.
Aww.
And it really, you know, and I say I delivered. I have to be, I have to change that for all the ladies listening. I didn't deliver the baby. I caught the baby. His mother delivered the baby.
You don't want to get in trouble, do you?
Well, you know.
It was all you. It was all you, Jordan.
I'm always in trouble, so it doesn't really matter.
Oh, I love it. It's a good story. All righty. Well, now that we've gotten that out of the way, let's go on to the next question that has been burning in my mind. How does a paramedic become a writer? I mean, was there an aha moment for you?
There's been an aha moment for a very, very long time. In high school, I was on the school newspaper, and I liked to write. And really, where I don't know exactly when it started. I had a pen pal. We're still friends 35, 36 years later. And I have all the letters she ever wrote me. I thought, man, that'd be a great book. And that was kind of the spark way back when. And then when my son was about three, we were getting ready to go to church one Sunday morning, and he was looking at those lovely little yellow flowers up in the yard that most people want to kill. And he called them dandy flowers, and I remembered that. Oh, God. Then, unfortunately, the book I started writing was while my wife and I were separated and ultimately divorced. And that was my therapy to get through that. And so I wrote every night, and it just sort of evolved.
Oh.
So,
I like how all of the life circumstances kind of come into play to create something, huh?
Yeah. And there's a part of the book, I'm not going to say which part, that is what I call the highly emotional ending. And I can tell you when I got to that part, the tears were rolling, and there was more to it than more than I'll ever admit to. And it just really, when you get to that part of the book, I've had lots of people tell me, oh my gosh, I cried.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, when I finally let my daughter read it, she got to that climactic ending and she ran in the car driving down the highway and she reached over and smacked me.
Oh.
And she says, why did you do that?
Oh.
And I said, if I hadn't done that, there wouldn't be a story.
Mm-hmm.
She says, fine, but I still don't like it.
Oh.
I also had a coworker. You know, this is when I knew I had a book that people probably would like to read. I had a coworker who read the draft. It was in a three-ring binder, and it was probably the draft was probably 500 pages, you know, double spaced, all that. She read it in 2 days, and she brought it back to me. I saw her coming, and she was walking with purpose, and she came into my office. And she threw it at me.
Oh.
Not on the desk, at me. And I won't tell you what she said, but it was her opinion that my parents were not married when I was born. And she left. She wouldn't talk to me for a week. And I'm like, ooh, I got to her. Uh-huh. And so that's probably when it really came to me. I was like, I think I got something here.
Absolutely. If you start eliciting those kind of responses, you know something's up.
It was funny. I laugh about that now.
So. Oh, that's awesome. Well, now, so what genre would you classify your writing style?
I call it young adult.
Okay.
I mean, when I write it, I wrote it knowing that my daughter and my son would read it, and I did not allow either one of them to read it till they were about 12 or 13, about 7th or 8th grade. There's a very, very, very mild innuendo in the book. You probably see worse thing on TV commercials, but I'm the dad, and I wrote it in a way that I was comfortable with.
Mm-hmm.
And every year I do it's called the Young Authors Conference. Not that I'm a young author, but all these kids are like, I always get a group of fifth graders, and they're fun. And at the end, you have to bring your books, and you can sell them. And before I will sell anybody a book, I tell them, you might want to read it first, mom or dad, and then you decide.
Okay.
Because there's some very mild innuendo. It's nothing bad, nothing vulgar by any means, but I think people need to know.
Yeah, no,
in fact,
I get that.
I've turned down sales because of it. I say, well, but I say, no, I don't think so. And I won't sell them books if they're not going to read it before they read the kids read it.
That's very important. I'm glad that you said that. I bet a lot of people wouldn't give that any consideration. That says a lot about who you are.
I kind of look at it, what would I want somebody to do for my kids are that age?
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, I didn't let my kids read it till they were 12 or 13.
Mm-hmm. Good man and good dad. Well, let's talk about those books. Your first is titled Dandy Flowers, and the second book is Dandy Flowers, Laura's Diaries. Give us a brief synopsis of both of those books.
Okay, well, they're all the same story. Dandy Flowers, I always ask, when people ask, I say, well, you probably think you knew your mom and your dad pretty well, and most people say, yeah. And so the character of Erin thought she knew her father pretty well. And so on a long weekend after she gets engaged, her father, Jerry, invites her home because there's something he needs to talk to her, and it's called his love talk. So she comes home, and her mother is conspicuously absent. So it's just dad and daughter, and throughout this long weekend, Jerry reveals to her a part of his life she knew nothing about. It's his first love. Her name's Laura. And the story it kind of segues between present and past. And in the past with Jerry and Laura, and how they, you know, during their dating life and all that, and then ultimately why they're not together anymore. And so, excuse me, at the end of Dandy Flowers, it jumps ahead a little bit. Erin is now married, and she has children of her own. In fact, they're babies. And, of course, moms and dads with new grandbabies, you know, they like to come and help. And so they get the kids settled, and after they leave, Erin's husband finds a box containing all these books, which are Laura's diaries. And that's how the first book ends. The second book, Dandy Flowers, Laura's Diaries, it begins when Erin's children are about 4. And Erin and her husband are going to go on a trip to Chicago, the business trip she gets to go on. And her dad, Jerry, gets to take care of the twins. And by the way, writing about a place you've never been, I've never been to Chicago, and I had to write about it. That was fun.
Mm-hmm.
So while they're in Chicago, Erin's kind of left to her own devices. Her husband's on, he doesn't have more time, but he has to do all these meetings. So she kind of runs around, and she goes to a place called Manny's Deli, which is a real place in Chicago. And who does she run into? Laura's parents. Mm-hmm. And she ends up spending time with them, and they can answer all these questions because she's always been really, really intrigued about this mysterious Laura, even after reading the diaries. So you get to find out more about Laura. And what I also tell people is, when you get to the end of the first book, you will not like me. When you get to the end of the second book, I will be back in your good graces. And then lots of neat, wonderful things. And I also, one of my favorite authors is Steve Barry. Mm-hmm. And he takes factual events and weaves a fictional tale around them. And I tried to do that a little bit. And probably one of the best compliments I got from the first book, I talk about the Kennedy assassination in there. And the first people that I ever let read the draft were the same age, 15, 16 years old. They were the same age as the characters when Kennedy was assassinated. That's why I asked them. I said, did I get that anywhere close? And they said, you were dead on, just dead on. Mm-hmm. And, Kennedy was killed about 9 months before I was born. So I have no knowledge of that, but I do a lot of reading. So that made me feel good that I was able to
capture that,
bring that forth like that.
Well, that's interesting that you wove some real life events into your books. And this takes place in the 60s, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. In the past, it's back in the starts at about 1962 mm-hmm. and ends roughly about 1971, 72, somewhere there.
Okay. Now, did you plan from the beginning to write more than one Dandy Flowers?
No, but after writing the first one, I'm like, there's so much more here. But mm-hmm. I wasn't even completely done with the first one. I'm thinking, it's time to write more. And so I went back and kind of tweaked the story. Part of in the first book, there's a segment from about 1966 to 1969. I skip over quite a bit. And that's the main focus of the second book, is that time frame. Mm-hmm. Because there's so much went on there. You had Martin Luther King killed. I talk about that.
Mm-hmm.
You have Bobby Kennedy assassinated. That's in there. And there's a lot of different things like that that real events that affected people at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And it also affected Jerry and Laura.
Interesting. Now, was there something that led you to create this plot? Where did this idea come from?
Honestly, I couldn't tell you.
Mm-hmm.
I just started writing.
Okay.
Initially, how the story was going to be was Erin was going to be a lot older, and she was going to go back home after her father passed away, and she finds all this. And I wrote about 50 pages, and I got stuck. I'm thinking, if my dad did that to me, I'd be mad. So I shucked it all, threw it in the trash can, and started over. And so I did it the way the book reads now.
Oh, I'm glad you did, because I like it the way it is, where she's having this conversation that she doesn't know what he's going to talk about, and then brings this up. And you could just put yourself in that girl's shoes to think, all right, you think you know everything about your parents, and then your dad tells you about his first love, and it's, it wasn't mom. And I find that to be a lot more intriguing and interesting.
And one of the other things that I did, and when you read the book, the little town where all this takes place, mm-hmm. is never named. It does not have a name. And that was kind of hard to do. And I wrote it that way because, if you've ever been in a little town, and I also like Stephen King. He made up the fictional town of Derry, Maine. And I thought, if King can do it for Maine, I can do it for Missouri. So it's just this unnamed town up in the middle of nowhere, Missouri. And that way, as you're reading it, you
mm-hmm.
can, interject yourself into the story that way. And people have liked that, but there were times I was like, doggone it, why did I do that?
It's like, where are we?
Well, I know where we are. I just say, how am I going to work around this? And then I had to stop and think and, do a little rewriting and eliminate and start over. And I think it turned out pretty well.
Well, that's a good challenge for you as a writer then.
Yeah, it was fun. And like I said, it was very good therapy.
Yep.
It really helped me through it.
Right, during that difficult time for you. Now, your characters, where did you find them?
Well, I like to call Laura, and she's the main character of the book. She is a blue-eyed blonde, and she is, I would say she would be my dream girl. I took all these things that I like and put them into one character. And there's a young lady I know. In fact, there's two young ladies I know that or Laura, kind of. One, when I was writing the book, her mom taught dance classes for my daughter. And I kind of based Laura's physical appearance, kind of about 5'2", blonde hair and blue-eyed, and on this particular girl, who actually went on to be a Tennessee Titans and Kansas City Chiefs cheerleader. And then the other girl, now this blew me away. I was writing the second book, and there is some cheerleading stuff and so I got a subscription to a cheerleading magazine. Yeah, that looks real good when you're in your 40s looking
yeah,
at
yeah, right,
magazine.
Dad.
You know. But there was, on this one particular issue, there was a girl on the front cover. And I looked at it and was like, wow, she's pretty. Got to the feature article, and the picture of her was how I had Laura pictured in my mind.
Wow.
And there's only two people who can attest to that, or two, myself and my cat, Simon, and Simon is no longer with us. You're going to have to take my word for it.
Good grief.
And the young lady, she knows. I told her. We became friends on Facebook. And she was a Houston Texans cheerleader, so I kind of got this blonde-haired, blue-eyed cheerleader thing going. But anyhow, I just kind of took all the best parts of what I like and put them into Laura.
Mm-hmm. All right. So that's where Laura came from. So
I guess one of the things that I call her my Frank and Hottie.
Oh, oh gosh. Now you're scaring me. Oh, my gosh.
It's just Halloween the other day. So you know.
Okay, so we'll go with that.
Yeah.
So the first book was more of a male's perspective. So what was it like for you to write so emotionally, really, from two different perspectives, from a male's perspective in the first book, and then a woman's perspective in Laura's Diaries?
It really wasn't that hard.
Okay.
I mean, when I was writing the first book, a lot of it was, going through the separation, divorce. There was a lot of emotion there anyhow. But the second book was a little later, and it really wasn't hard. I'm thinking, now, I wonder. That's a good question to ask when you're writing, is I wonder. It's probably the best question you can ask.
Mm.
And then you start writing, and if it doesn't work, you delete it and write something else. Mm-hmm. It really wasn't that difficult at all.
Okay.
I talked to people. I talked to a lot of people and say, what do you think about this? But I never would give much away. And when I'm writing, I never, ever, ever, while the work is in progress, I never let people read it. I won't do that.
Yeah, I agree. That takes away from you, I would think, and starts interjecting outside opinions, and then you don't even know what you're thinking. Yeah, you don't even know what's going on.
I've had other writers say, would you read my work in progress? And I say, absolutely not.
Mm-hmm.
And I say, why not? And I'm like, it's very simple. It's a work in progress, and if I say, ooh, what about this? Automatically, it no longer becomes totally yours.
Yes.
So
yes.
I won't do that, and some people look at me funny, but I just won't.
No, I think that's great advice. No one has said that to me before. Thank you.
Yep.
All right. Well, now we've got the play adaptation going on. So tell us about that and what it is that you're so generously offering those who wish to perform it.
Yeah. The play has never been performed. So I'm still writing the third book, and I just got really, really stuck. And I'm still a little bit stuck with the third book. I'm not very far into it, but I needed to do some writing. I thought, let's make this into a play. I did. The play I think there's 8 or 9 characters total. And it's just the story. There are actually two versions of it. One is for just a main stage, and then there's one for a main stage and a side stage. And that's what I call version two, because there's two stages, is actually a pure adaptation of the story. For the single stage, I had to make a little bit of an adjustment, but I'm the author and I can do that, so I did. And what the play is, it's very simple. I will give it to any high school, community group, college group, nonprofit that wants to put it on. Free of charge. I don't want to make any money. But the one stipulation I have is you got to tell me when it's going to be on so I can come see my characters come to life.
Mm.
And then I also... Excuse me. I also have it's an option if people want to do that. So if you're a community theater group and you wanted to put the play on, if we could get all the logistics worked out, I would be there with copies of the book that it's based on. We would sell those books for whatever cost, and then I would donate all the profits to that theater group.
Oh, my. See, that's...
I'm going to win a lot, going to get a lot more out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Than just money. And besides that, if I donate it, I can also get a tax deduction. So, there we go.
No, I would imagine just that personal satisfaction of seeing these people come to life on the stage. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's...
And, those characters have been living in my head for a long time. They need to start paying some rent.
Exactly. Now, we need to get them out on the street, don't we?
That's right.
Yeah, let me think of some local groups around here and maybe spread the word, because I just think that'd be awesome.
There is a theater down in Tifton, Georgia that is looking at it. They've had it since July, and I haven't heard anything. It's about time to send them a note and say, hey, you going to do it or you not going to do it? It doesn't matter either way. Just let me know, because I hate waiting. I'm a little impatient that way.
All right, so you'll send a copy of the screenplay to the director?
Yeah, I send a review copy of the play.
Okay.
And then we'll work it out. It's no big deal.
All right, good. I've got a couple ideas, so maybe we'll talk about it later. Cool. All right, well, now let's get to your writing process a little bit. Where do you write?
Well, usually at my kitchen table. A lot of times, I do, believe it or not, I do some of the preliminary writing, quote unquote, in the car going to and from work, meaning have a voice recorder. If I have that epiphany, I pick it up and rattle off something real quick. And some nights I will sit down and I will, you know, write for 3-4 hours at a time, nonstop. There's other nights I'll sit down, I'll open up the file and I'll look at it and go, not so much, not tonight, and not do anything.
Yeah.
There have been times where I have agonized for hours over one sentence to get it just right. And then, you know, 2 or 3 weeks later, when going back and do a little editing, go, well, that's not really good at all. And then just write what I meant to in the first place. But, you know, this is how I work. I'm kind of sporadic. I write when the mood strikes.
Yep. So with that in mind, how long did it take for you to complete the first book?
When you say complete it, what do you mean?
Just from starting to sit down to write, yeah.
Yeah, so from the time I wrote, from the start writing book till the first draft was complete, from about April till about December.
Okay.
About 9 months.
Okay.
Now, and what I tell authors, once you get the first draft done, that's when the real writing begins.
Yes.
Then you go back and fine tune.
Yep. So. You are absolutely right. Now, when you're working with your characters, do you talk or listen to your characters, or are you in control of them?
When I write and I'm working on dialogue and characters, I'm so glad it's only me and the cats. I get up and I walk around and I talk out loud and I get just, you know, and I just think about it. And, you know, I do speak it out loud and then sit down and write. So, yeah, I do whatever is necessary to get me through what's needed. And sometimes I'll go sit up at the local McDonald's and I will watch people. And then something will happen. And it's happened several times. Like, oh, now I know. And that might be a motivation.
Interesting, because that takes me to my next question. I was going to ask if there's any interesting writing quirks we should know about. I have some people that somebody writes in the dark because growing up they were writing in the dark in bed because their parents thought they should be sleeping. And so it just kind of as a habit that carried on. And some people drink wine. Some people eat chocolate. Anything interesting we should know about you?
No, I write when the mood strikes. Again, when I'm thinking about it, I go up and I watch people quite a bit, especially if I'm thinking about a part of the story. Or if the weather's nice, you know, I'll just take a walk around town. And there's a part in the second book that I was walking past my mailbox and it just came to me, just like the light went on. I was like, oh, here we go. So I had to run down and start writing.
So whenever it hits, it happens.
Oh, yeah, and you just know.
Yes.
You just know.
So have you learned anything about yourself as you have been writing your books?
Yeah, I would say. Since I started writing the books, I have learned to appreciate people a lot more. You know, as I kind of belabor this point a little bit, but, you know, going through the divorce was awful. I hope nobody ever goes through another one because that was just terrible. And I learned that I needed to grow up quite a little bit and be more mature, and I have done so. And, you know, but those books, you know, if I were to drop dead tonight, I kind of look at those as, you know, those are for my kids. They're kind of my legacy, I suppose.
Yes.
And then they could look at it years from now and say, hey, my dad wrote this. Mm-hmm. And I think that'd be kind of cool.
It is very cool. It's very important. It says so many things about you, and I think your children will be able to take away so much from that. So, yeah, thanks for sharing that. Now, let's talk a bit about marketing and promotion. You self-published these?
Yeah, well, I started out with a quote-unquote publisher, and I have learned a lot about publishing. I can tell you many, many, many things not to do. There's the particular publisher I started with. I'm not going to name names because I don't want it to sound like sour grapes. I was with them for 5 years, and it was a very bad experience. I didn't get hurt out of as much as others have with this particular company. But when people found Facebook, say, what do you know about, you know, the XYZ publishing company? I send them a private message and say, I had a bad experience. Would you like to hear about it?
Yeah.
And then they say yes, and I'll tell them. I said, then you have to decide for yourself.
Right.
As far as marketing, I have that is the great mystery.
It is.
I've got my website. I do Facebook. I do Twitter. I do that Young Authors Conference. I do things like I'm with you tonight. But marketing is probably the hardest thing to do. And I do lots of different things. Go to craft festivals. I do. And to get the thing out there. Mm. And if I were to have to live off of what I've made off my books, I would have starved to death a long time ago. Mm. So
you and most other authors, really, it's more of a personal labor of love, because here you are spending the time writing it, and to market and promote, you almost need to be two or three other people, because that's a full-time job in and of itself.
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't, if people ask me, how do you market? I'm like, I wish I knew. I could answer that better, because I don't know.
Yeah, it takes a lot of time.
But I'm learning.
Well, speaking of learning, what advice then would you give a fellow author that he or she could try immediately?
You know, as far as marketing, you've got to get your name out there. You might have to find some new and unique ways to do that. I use Twitter. I have a Facebook account for the book. I have a website for the book, and I belong to a lot of writing Facebook groups that I'm in. So I get it out that way. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of interesting. Every now and then, you know, you get a little email from right now, self-published. I went through CreateSpace and get an email say, hey, you made some money. I was like, yes. But that doesn't happen as often as I would like.
No, just keep working at it, right?
Keep plugging away.
Exactly. Right. So speaking of plugging, what's next?
Well, I'm going to finish eventually the third and last Dandy Flowers book. I wish I really had never mentioned I was going to write a third one. Otherwise, Laura's Diaries would have been it, and I could have ended it nicely, but I promised, so I'm going to write the third one. After that, I've got several ideas. I've got an idea about a book about, believe it or not, a love story that takes place during the Holocaust.
Mm.
And so I've got this, as a minister friend of mine said, I have a germ of an idea for that, and I've been thinking about that for probably, oh gosh, a lot of years now, just not quite ripened yet. There's no real deadlines. I mean, I do it when I feel like it.
Exactly. It'll happen when it does.
And if it doesn't, oh well.
There you go. That's right. Well, now, is there anything we missed that you would like to talk about today?
Oh, I know what I'm going to tell. There's a young lady. She lives in Oregon, and her name is Sarah. In fact, Sarah is in the second book. Her youth minister got a copy of my book, liked it, and bought several copies for all the kids in his youth group. Sarah was one of them. And when she was a senior in high school, she read it, and she got to the climactic ending of the first book. And I talked to her on Facebook. I talked to her on the phone. And she told me that when she got to that part, she just, my cats are going insane. She got to that climactic ending, and it just broke her. She just melted down, tears, and just the tears flowed. And she said prior to that, she was kind of emotionally flat, kind of a flat affect. Just life wasn't good, life wasn't bad, life was.
Mm.
And when she got to that, she thanked me. She said, that really helped me get through that. And it wasn't just a little while later, she met Carl. And Sarah and Carl have now been married about 7 years, have three beautiful kids. And I like to think that maybe my book had a little bit of something to do with that. I don't know, but she's doing quite well. And so in the second book, Sarah is Sarah Rose. And there's a lot of, in the second book, there's a lot of supporting characters that are based on real people.
Mm-hmm.
And please don't ask me which ones they are, because honestly, I can't tell you off the top of my head.
But they know who they are.
They know who they are.
Exactly. Well, now, where can folks then go to learn more about you and to purchase your books?
They can go to my website, www.dandyflowers.com. I'm going to add something new. I was thinking about this morning. When they order them off the website, it'll actually take them right to CreateSpace, and they can buy them through there.
Okay.
But if people would like a signed book, I'm going to put a thing on the website to where I would make available a book plate, adhesive-backed book plate, and they could request it. I would sign it, mail it to them, and then they could put that in the book or however they want to do
it. Oh, yeah, I like that. That's a great idea. So that's dandyflowers.com, and I love that name as well. Thank your son for that. I want to end with a bit of a review that I found on your website from your book. I like this one. This person wrote, "I read this book in one day and found myself unable to put it down. I laughed, loved, lived, and cried right along with the characters and was sad to see the story end. I've read many books, but rarely has one moved me the way Dandyflowers did. It's a thought-provoking look at love that makes you stop and think about what is truly most important in life." I agree with that, and I want to thank you for caring enough to write this and for sharing you and your work with us today. So thanks so much, Jordan.
Thanks for having me on there on your show. And buy my books. Yes, buy lots of them. I have a daughter in college and a son who's a junior. You know, college expenses are there, so, you know, we need some money.
We've got to take care of Goose and Monkey Man.
That's right. That's right. And hey, you're in Ohio. She goes to Ohio State. He might go to reform school if he doesn't change his ways.
All right, folks, we've got the whole sob story going on here, so we need to get to dandyflowers.com and get some copies of Jordan T. Maxwell's books. Jordan, once again, what a pleasure to spend time with you. Thank you so much.
Appreciate it. Thank you for having me.